The Subcommittee on Reform and Redesign will come to order. Today is February 10th, Friday. This is, although we're a couple of weeks into session, this is the first meeting of this committee. So I'd like to start out with just some introductions, a little overview of hopefully what this committee will be looking at and doing moving forward. And I know we have, we're all new members to this committee, but we also have a couple of members on this committee that are new to the Senate, some of whom have had meetings with these members, some of whom have not. So I'd like to just go around the table, do the standard first day introductions, even though we're into about day 13 here or something like that. Let's start down there with Ted Daly, just because he's right in my line of sight.
Good morning, everyone. State Senator Ted Daly and I represent Eagan and the eastern part of Burnsville.
Senator Al DeKreif, representing District 25, all of Le Sueur County and parts of Scott, Sibley, and Rice counties.
I'm Kathy Sharon. I represent Mankato in Blue Earth County, all of Nicola County, and a portion of Sibley County.
Terry Bonoff, I represent Minnetonka, Plymouth, Medicine Lake, and it's very good to be here this morning. It's good to have this committee underway.
Michelle Benson, District 49, Ham Lake, Andover, Coon Rapids, and like Terry, I was beginning to get concerned if this day would ever come, so thrilled that this is happening.
Ann Rest, I represent New Hope, Crystal, Robbinsdale, and the northeast corners of Plymouth and Golden Valley, and I am really, really eager to achieve good results here. Admire particularly Senator Bonoff and Senator Benson, with apologies to the chair for the work that they have been doing over the past months. It's in working with House members. It's really been marvelous.
Thanks.
I'm Chris Eaton. I represent Brooklyn Center, Brooklyn Park, and I'm very happy to be here.
John Carlson, Senate District 4. That's Bemidji to Brainerd. Probably the longest drive here of anyone. Once we're done, I'll have a 4.5-hour drive home. So glad to be here. Thanks.
And I am Sean Nino. I represent the ex-urban part of the state, straight up by 35. Get to the other side of Forest Lake. You're in the southern end of my district, up to Rush City and over into Isanti County. We could just go around the table starting here, and if staff could introduce themselves as well.
My name is Michelle Lentz. I'm a legislative assistant to Senator Nino.
Stephanie James, Senate Counsel.
Craig Sunday, Senate Republican Research.
Adam Axvig, Committee Administrator.
Well, I'd like to start out first with just reading what we have. We didn't have it on the agenda here, but I think we will in weeks to come. What we have for our vision and mission statement for
me now. The staff over there, too.
Oh, I'm sorry. We missed the rest of the staff.
Important people.
Let's have the rest of the staff tell us who they are and what their area of tremendous expertise is.
Ryan Majerus, Senate Chief Advisor. I'm Nathan Rosinski, I'm Page. I'm Kevin Lundy, Planalist.
Thank you. Thank you, committee members, for keeping me on track here. For a vision and mission statement that was created for this committee, I'll simply just read it. The Minnesota State Senate and hopefully the House committee as well, our brother or sister committee, as it were, on government reform and redesign envisions an efficient, effective, citizen-centric government. The committee members' mission is to review existing policies and enable legislation in support of making government operations continually efficient and effective to serve the citizens of Minnesota in the digital age. Now, this really is, as best as anyone can tell, really probably a first in the nation. Our committees, if you were to look at them on an organization chart, are very vertical. We deal with education. We deal with HHS. We deal with whatever. The idea for a committee like this is to turn that sideways 90 degrees and be horizontal and look across all aspects of government to see where can we make government more efficient, where can we be better, smarter, faster, stronger, where can we do more with less. And not just looking at where can we lop off stuff to make it smaller, because that's not effective and efficient. It's smaller, but it's not better. And what we need to do is look for better. And I trust that all of you are here on this committee not because you're looking for the status quo, but you're looking for better. And that is ultimately what we want to do and what we want to get done. And quite frankly, you know, we all carry that D or R behind our name, but that's not a partisan thing. You know, we all want better government. We can argue about what government should or shouldn't do, but we all want it to be done well. And that can very easily be an agreeable common goal. And I think we can get some good things done. We have tremendous opportunities in the years to come. We have both tremendous opportunities and tremendous challenges at the state level. If you look at the demographics, not just of our citizens, but demographics of state employees. You know, over the coming year, last year, we saw the most retirements ever of state employees. Now, that's that creates a tremendous opportunity, but that also creates a tremendous challenge. That is a large portion of our human resource that is leaving us. That's institutional knowledge, that's expertise, that's going away, and that can create a challenge when we're losing that significant portion. I believe the number in the coming years is something like 15% of our employees are going to be coming to retirement age, state employees. So that gives us an opportunity, if we can find efficiencies, to be able to consolidate and make government better without having to have layoffs, et cetera. But it also means that we're losing that expertise, and we need to be forward-thinking and look at that and make sure that it just doesn't disappear and leave us before we can utilize what we have here today in our great state employees. Well, this committee will, amongst many other things, exercise some oversight on policies that we have previously implemented. That's what we're going to take a look at today with an overview of OET, but also, and that's kind of backward looking to make sure that we're exercising our due diligence and making sure that the things we wanted to get done in the past are actually getting done today, but also forward thinking. And members, whatever ideas you've got, let's talk about them. Let's bring them forward. Maybe it's in bill form. Maybe it's just an informational discussion, but let's talk about it in the days and weeks to come and see where we might be able to go to make the SS Minnesota one of the most efficient ships in the United States. So at this point, if we could have Ms. Parnell come to the table and start us with an overview. And if you would please, for the record, just state your name and tell us what you've got. Oh, I'm sorry. Before that, Ms. Parnell, I didn't realize Senator Zizek. Prior to your entrance here, we went around the table, kind of gave some introductions, and let everybody know who we are. If you'd want to take that opportunity now, that would be wonderful.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Senator Carrie Dietzick. I represent Northeast, Southeast, and Cedar Riverside at Senate District 59.
Thank you. Ms. Parnell.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Carolyn Parnell. I'm the CIO for the state of Minnesota and the Commissioner of the Office of Enterprise Technology. Last summer, you handed me and my agency a huge task. And as it turns out, there's a lot of people who are very interested in what we're doing. And so I'm quite accustomed to giving updates, and I'm happy to answer any questions that you might have. If you're not very familiar with IT consolidation and what came out of last year's legislative session, this really is the largest state government reorganization, I believe, in decades. It takes all of the IT that has existed in isolation in 70-plus agencies and boards in the executive branch and attempts to, number one, inventory what is out there, and number two, move down the path of becoming far more efficient. I think the early legislation really talked a lot about the redundancy of IT in the state, and as it turns out, that certainly is the case. So we are actually moving to one IT organization. We are calling it sort of state IT for the short term. And really in the process of developing an identity of an entirely new organization, primarily for the now almost 1,900 IT employees that report into OET. So the basic legislative requirements was that we end up with one centralized IT organization, that by the next biennium we have one centralized IT budget, and also by the next biennium we have one state project portfolio, and then a real sort of demand for efficiencies, which I do not think will be a problem at all. So how are we going about it? We're looking at this as though it's one huge IT project, and I can guarantee you that the IT employees in the state of Minnesota are really familiar with IT projects and how we go about them. So the first step is to really understand the business needs. In this case, that meant understanding what the intent of the legislation was. So we have worked with the Attorney General's office, with the governor's legal counsel, with our own legal counsel, with the authors of the legislation, and we really do believe we are interpreting it in the right way. The next important step is to involve the stakeholders. And IT consolidation had been a concept that was sort of circling around the state for a couple of years. Nobody really had defined it or really knew what it meant. And employees, for example, when they saw the legislation required that IT report into OET by October 1st, wondered where they would be going to work on October 1st. So we right away started communicating with the stakeholders, primarily employees. We want to keep them up to speed. We want them to feel included. We want their good ideas. This is also a major change for agency business owners and leaders, and they also have questions. So we're very much involved in frequent and complete communication. We're very transparent about what we do. As we produce documents, we put them on our website. There's just nothing at all secret about what we're doing. The next step is to sort of document what the state of IT is in the state of Minnesota. And it is pretty broad and scattered. I sometimes look at it like a box of spilled toothpicks, and you're picking up all those toothpicks, but you're not putting them back in the box. You're building a structure out of them. So we had October 1st as a pretty specific date to have identified which employees were in scope for IT consolidation, get a sort of baseline spend based on budgets of agencies. So we were able to meet that date. We do have the first go-round of the IT spend in the state. It is operationally about $406 million a year, and we're probably close to that with projects, so there's a significant IT spend in the state. We're also setting up benchmarks. We know very well that as we collect this data, we want to be able to measure our progress going forward. So we are establishing benchmarks. It's not real easy. If we try to compare ourselves with other states, there are different ways of figuring out what those benchmarks might be. Some people include federal funding, others don't. We are very intent on benchmarking with the private sector. We know that the private sector has gone through IT consolidation in one form or another over the last 5 or 10 years, so they're considerably ahead of us in that way. So we're just at that point where we have the first sweep of what actually exists in IT in the state. And now we're going about trying to organize it and look at it in a collective way. Next, we have a pretty general sense of where we're going to end up. We have the legislative mandates for a single budget, for a single organization, for finding efficiencies. And so we're pretty clear on what the opportunities are in IT, but sort of sifting through all of the issues, all the different technologies, all of the skill sets, et cetera, is something that takes a fair amount of time. Next, we determine strategy and key performance indicators. We have we were pretty clear from the time the legislation was signed that we wanted to approach it in a certain way. We set up a framework that established a centralization of IT within each agency. Amazingly enough, IT was not centralized within agencies, and some of the larger ones had their IT assets and people very spread out. So we are in the process of gathering a lot of information to really come up with that long-term strategy. We're tapping a lot of people. We're communicating with business leads. I stay in touch with the legislative authors about IT consolidation. So as soon as that strategy is ready, which we expect will be in March, we will have that too. Next, we take that strategy and we design the tactics around it. How are we going to get there? What are the details? There really has been a lot of effort and time put into planning. I know that people are probably pretty interested in results, but as I said earlier, we're approaching this like an IT project overall. And we really have to be very deliberative, very careful, plan carefully where we're going to go. Once we have that in place, then we'll start executing and things will move right along, in my opinion. And then, of course, as we go along, we want to measure the progress. We want to check back with our stakeholders. We want to involve our vendors. We want to keep employees engaged and informed. So our planning and implementation basically has taken shape in four different phases. The first one was to really get us to that October 1st deadline. It was a very aggressive timeline, and we needed to get that baseline spend and identify which IT employees were in scope and which were out of scope. And even that has been a little bit difficult. There are a number of employees who do IT work who are not classified as IT employees and vice versa. So that in itself is a major undertaking in terms of HR. Next, we knew that because agencies were not centralized, we needed to tackle that. And the way we're going about that is we've just finished what we call a reference model for IT. As I mentioned, every agency sort of made their own IT decisions, spent their IT dollars in a way that was not looked at from an enterprise level. It met their specific needs. But we really wanted to have everyone sort of define IT in the same way and look at IT across all agencies through the same lens. We now have that reference document, and we are asking the CIOs in agencies to take that reference document and sort of measure their IT against it. The CIOs and the agencies have been very involved in our process. They're very much members of the planning team, and they're taking this reference document that they have helped put together, assessing their own organizations, and figuring out what are they missing. And say, for example, an attribute of an IT centralized agency organization would definitely be security. So we ask them to look at what their maturity level is in terms of having a security function. Maybe they don't have one at all. Maybe they have a very robust one. And the idea is not necessarily to add any resources to make sure that they have that security capability, but now that we have a centralized approach to IT, we can sort of look around the IT organization to see how we can best fulfill that need. So we're expecting those reports from the CIOs by the end of February, and then we will really start digging into the processes and the tools that are used to deliver IT. And that's where we're going to pick up on efficiencies. We're going to be able to see what's replicated. We're going to be able to look at how we can define shared services amongst agencies and I think really make a difference going forward. Phase three is really the strategic planning that I spoke of. We do have a technical advisory committee in place. We've had one meeting. We have another meeting coming up next week. It consists of two commissioners, two deputy commissioners, a CFO, divisional director, a member of the county's AMC, I believe it is, a business grand poobah, as I call him, and a member from labor. So we just had one orientation meeting with them. We now have the beginnings of a strategy. They're really there to advise us on our strategy, sort of every step of the way. We expect to have a draft of our strategy to run by them next week. We are also looking at governance. The technical advisory committee is one aspect of governance. We also will have some operational committees that relate more specifically to the delivery of IT. So, for example, we'll have one committee on security. We'll have another one on IT architecture. They will be co-chaired by the owners of those issues within OET and a CIO from one of the agencies and staffed with subject matter experts in order to sort of build communities of interest, determine best practice, and really look at how we can be far more efficient in delivering services across the state. I also have a committee of legislators who some of you are here, who I meet with regularly, and I really, really, really appreciate your input and your advice going forward. We are, as you might well imagine, pushing the envelope in many ways regarding IT consolidation. For the first time, the state has a requirement to look at IT of a piece. There has not been a real mechanism for doing that before. So we're working closely with MMB to come up with the cost accounting structure that we need so that that also is transparent under the management of IT and yet in full view of the agencies. We have a very limited HR infrastructure that we are relying on admin for, and we're going to have to take a look at how we deal with all the HR issues. As you can imagine, just making sure that people are in the right classification so that they're in or out of scope is important. If they're not in the right classifications, we have to go through the paces of getting them in the right classifications. All of this takes time. All of it takes effort. But what we're after is really getting the true spend so that we know exactly what the state is spending on IT and where we can find those efficiencies. And then, of course, OET is having to change a good deal as a result of IT consolidation. So we are doing all of this right now with all internal resources. I stepped into an agency that has an amazing group of people who were able to put their minds to this and really get it planned and put in place. It's really quite amazing to me how capable these people are. But we do have to look at how we organize, because as we complete this inventory of IT assets and services, we know that we'll be able to offer more of them centrally. And as we take those now distributed services and centralize them, we have to have a pretty robust organization that can handle those things sort of coming into the organization and at the same time keep everything going. So we are looking at how to best be organized internally and expect to have that fully in place as well this spring. We are in the process of determining a five-year master plan. We are also in the process of determining a shorter-term, two-year sort of IT roadmap. Trying to best define what this new organization is going to look like and how it's going to operate. It really is, more than anything, a huge culture change for state agencies, for state IT employees, and it's actually pretty invigorating to realize that we can sort of redefine this centralized organization, put best practice in place. Mr. Chair, you mentioned the retirement factor. It's a huge factor in IT, and we're looking at easily losing 200 people per year due to retirement. Now, can we find efficiencies that will allow us to maybe hire one person in place of two that retire? Absolutely. But we still will need to refresh our workforce going forward. So we are intent on becoming an employer of choice and organizing a service delivery that will be attractive to employees across the state. And then, of course, phase four, once we get all of these things sort of in place, we'll start looking at service optimization. And that's where we find those efficiencies. That's where we find those cost savings. And that's what we're asking everyone to be patient for, because it will get here. So what have we accomplished? First milestone was transferring all agency CIOs into OET. That occurred. Then we had to transfer all state employees. We are in the process of developing service level agreements for each agency. This is something new for the state. There has been service level agreements on an agency or interagency basis, but for the first time, the state has to look at a service level agreement that not only references the sort of core utility services that IT delivers, but some of the very unique IT needs of agencies. We are expecting to have that completed by the end of June, but it is a huge deal. MNGO transfer, we have started that. The geographical information officer is retiring, so we are in the process of hiring his replacement. I have been quite amazed at how much is being done in terms of geographical information systems in the state, and I think this may be one of the areas where we can really make a difference for citizens and for other local government, et cetera, by sort of pooling together this resource and setting them all in one direction. I mentioned the IT Advisory Committee that is in place. We completed our report to the legislature. I believe you all have a copy of that. We have to have the IT project portfolio in place by the next biennium, and then again another report in 2014. So what are the benefits? I see so many benefits. It's just quite amazing. I think that we'll be able to calculate savings that will allow us to reinvest in IT in a more strategic way. We do not yet have a mechanism for capturing those savings, and I would remind you that this IT consolidation was not funded. We've been doing it with internal resources. We know that procurement will be probably the biggest area of cost savings, and we're working closely with MMB to come up with a mechanism for capturing those savings, setting up a sort of savings sharing program with agencies, but being able to have some dollars to reinvest in IT consolidation. We have already had some cost avoidance. In December, we renegotiated a contract, saved $600,000. Again, we didn't have a mechanism for capturing that, but we're also tracking those kinds of cost avoidances as they come up. We know that as some of our larger contracts come into play, we'll have huge savings there as well. Right now, there are vendors who have contracts with multiple agencies. If we now purchase centrally, we'll be able to negotiate volume, discounts, et cetera. That's something that we will be tracking very carefully and communicating as well. I think we will eventually get to the point. This is really a multi-year project, but I do believe we'll eventually get to the point where there may be some prioritization of projects. That's going to take several years, but I do think that that's an advantage. I think that we will end up being more responsive and convenient to Minnesota citizens. I think that there are things done now that are replicated that will free people up to be a little more innovative and creative in how we provide services. We have a pool of IT employees now that we can use a lot more creatively. I think they'll be more productive and more agile. Employees have, for the most part, been very positive about this change. Once they knew that their worlds weren't going to be entirely turned upside down, they started looking at the possibilities. And they really see some advantage in working across agencies and teaming up with people in other agencies who have similar interests and similar skills. So that's a huge plus. Again, reduced operational complexity due to lack of or less redundancy and replication of services and systems and technology in general. And then next generation technologies. As we become, I guess I would call it leaner in our delivery of IT services, we'll free up some time to look a little more carefully at what's coming down the pike, be very planful in how we're going to implement new technologies as opposed to it sort of happening randomly or in little pockets of agencies here and there. So just the important points from the legislative report before I ask if you have any questions. We really see the critical success factor being keeping the legislative language as it is. The legislative authors were incredibly gracious in crafting language that makes it possible and makes it work for us to deliver this huge change. And I think it's really, really important that we preserve that language in order for us to carry this out over the next several years. We do not see statutory changes needed. We do have some contradictions in a couple of statutes that relate to projects. For example, OET might have oversight for a certain dollar amount of a project in one statute and a different dollar amount in another one. So we're working on some cleanup there. And then we're examining pretty carefully whether or not OET should change its name. It's a perfectly good name. It reflects exactly what we do. But in the interest of really defining a new IT organization and getting employees on board, I think it's important to have an identity that they feel a part of instead of just sort of being swallowed up by OET. So we are doing some assessment on that as well. We are learning some risks as we pull IT into one view. Again, I mentioned we do not have a mechanism to capture savings, but we expect that to be coming shortly. We're working with MMB to identify the HR issues. We are finding that investment in different agencies has been at different levels in the past. It might be because an agency has federal funding that has set a baseline for IT. Maybe a good enough case hasn't been made for investing in new technology, but we are finding that there are haves and have-nots. We expect as we move all of the IT budget into one OET-managed budget, we'll be able to equalize some of those situations. Security and risk, OET has had a pretty intensive effort in the last few years to set up a security program. It was not necessarily followed by all agencies, and now that we are responsible for all of that, we're finding that we probably have to step that up a little bit. And then procurement, as I mentioned, I think that's where we'll find the largest cash savings. And we're working with the Department of Administration to sort of streamline that process and have a more elegant way and actually, quite honestly, a quicker way of bringing technology in the door. And that's my update. I'm happy to answer any questions you might have.
Members, Senator Carlson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess the first question, Ms. Parnell, is when you folded in the CIOs from the different agencies, do they still maintain, I'm trying to understand how they still maintain that tie with their agency vis-a-vis the OET. And can you explain a little bit how that works and how they still bring the needs from that agency in? And
sure. They are staying physically in their agency. The CIOs actually report to me. We've put them in a admittedly difficult situation. They have to sort of balance the requirement to start looking at IT from an enterprise level and yet understand the unique needs of an agency. They're doing a good job in figuring those things out. Eventually, I believe we'll get to the point where that common good IT is delivered centrally, and the CIOs in that agency will be able to focus really on what the unique needs of that agency is.
Senator, yes, sorry.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Parnell, I noticed a number of references to the problem of not being able to capture savings or recapture savings. And I'm wondering if you could discuss that a little bit more. And I'm wondering if that goes to the need for maybe some dynamic scoring when it comes to fiscal notes, or maybe that's a whole different issue. I'm seeing a kind of a parallel there. Can you talk a little bit more about what needs to be done so that you can recapture those savings?
Ms. Parnell.
Mr. Chair, members, yes, when I talk about the ability to capture savings through procurement, I can give you an example of the vendor that we dealt with in December. We negotiated a contract, and because we were able to come to the table with a significant dollar amount as a centralized organization as opposed to a smaller dollar amount from an agency, we were able to negotiate $600,000 in what we have to call cost avoidance. That money did not end up in our pockets. Actually, the agency that was the primary user of this vendor, you know, saved the most, in essence. But those dollars just kind of dissipate. What we're going to have to look at, because OET is managing IT consolidation through service level agreements, and those service level agreements have costs associated with them. We're entirely, 95% a chargeback organization. If we negotiate a service with an agency that has a cost related to it, and we are able to negotiate savings with the vendor from a centralized perspective, we can pass those savings on to the agency through that service level agreement, or share those savings through a service level agreement, keeping some of that for further investment. MMB just does not have a good mechanism for us to capture those dollars and be able to put them in an account where we can redeploy them for consolidation purposes.
Senator Nelson.
Just to follow up. And so what needs to be done so that they could have that type of mechanism?
Mr. Chair, members, I'm leaving it to MMB to figure out what the mechanism for that is. I think there may have to be some cost accounting structure set up that allows us to. We're under some fairly rigorous rules regarding our chargeback, regarding federal funding, et cetera. So they're going to have to come up with a mechanism for us to be able to put that money in an account and redeploy it for what is really needed.
Thank you.
Senator Benson?
Actually, I was wondering if Senator Bonoff was to that point.
I was, yeah.
Senator Bonoff.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. With regard to capturing the savings, I think it is really important, and I remember a while back when I had carried the shared services bill for school districts, we tried to create a mechanism where the school districts, if they had savings, they could keep those savings within that. And it was a complicated method, and I think that they didn't really trust that that was going to happen. And so as we look at this going forward, I think it would be, and I think this is your idea as well, Commissioner, it would be great to create a fund that is an incentive-based fund so that those agencies who participate in the savings creation get some benefit of that. And I think that's the direction you're going. And so we're going to have to figure out how in statute we allow them to do that. And it's complicated.
Senator Benson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Ms. Parnell. It's my probably third time through part of this presentation, and think it's very well laid out. I do have some questions, and very broad. Have other states done this? Are you leveraging information from what others have learned in the public and private sector? We don't need to reinvent the wheel, and so while I understand that things need to move apace, if you can get information from somewhere else to move it forward, I'd like to hear about what you're doing.
Ms. Parnell.
Mr. Chair, members, absolutely. We are learning from other states. In some instances, we have learned what not to do. We are a little bit unique, and I think about half of all states have gone through some flavor of consolidation. Sometimes it's just the infrastructure, and so there's a lot of different ways of going about it. We have pulled in one person to advise us early on. His name is Jerry Meckling. He was part of the Commission on Service Innovation. He's a Kennedy School faculty member. He's a Gartner consultant, and he has worked with my peer group, the National Association of State CIOs, on many of their centralization efforts. So, we've very much tapped other states. We are going about it, I believe, in a very different way than other states have. But I think we're starting to get some recognition for how we're doing it and the fact that it makes a lot of sense.
Okay. Senator Benson.
Mr. Chair and Commissioner Parnell, what about private sector? Because I know Target has their headquarters here. They have centrally located IT with service agreements to divisions. General Mills consolidated their divisions, whereas Land O'Lakes separated their IT in divisions. And so are you leveraging local knowledge, private sector experience, so that, again, we're not reinventing the wheel?
Ms. Parnell.
Mr. Chair, members, very much so. We have Rick King, who is the CTO of Thomson Reuters, on our technical advisory committee. And he and I have talked, as well as the governor's office, have talked about a sort of informal governance group consisting of those CIOs who have gone through this. One of the reasons is that we can learn from them. And secondly, they're accustomed to managing a huge IT budget of a piece. No one in the state has had that experience with state dollars before. So that won't be a formal part of our governance structure, but very much part of our plan.
When do we expect to see that happening?
Ms. Parnell.
Mr. Chair, members, we have our first truly working technical advisory committee. I think it's next week or the week after that, the end of February. I will be working with Rick King at that point to identify members. We have already had some CIOs express an interest, as they should. I tell them, you're citizens, and, we're spending your money. So I expect that to be in place probably sometime in April.
Senator Sharon, did you? Senator Bonner? I've got a list here. I'm trying to go in order. Senator Bonner?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Commissioner,
I think one of the things that I'm most looking forward to is to seeing the work as you do your project portfolios, because I think that's where we will all be able to reap the benefits of seeing that you, in fact, will have significant savings and more effectiveness as you go forward. And so I think sometimes people think centralization and they picture like this everything coming under one. And to your point, you know, that's not quite the trend. And some businesses are going the opposite. And so I think it's important for you to distinguish that it's not really about coming together, that you are going to be more autonomous and flexible in terms of the business unit service agreements as well. And if you might just speak a little bit about that so people around the table understand that you still are going to have that nimbleness, that just because you have it all under your purview doesn't mean that it will be, in fact, you know, less agile. The other thing is, could you speak about the future with regard to IT as it relates to cloud computing? Those of us who aren't in your area, we hear about it. We see it on our iPads. How does that affect the direction that IT will be going in our future? And then lastly, I know that we'll be introducing some legislation that will ask the legislature to also consolidate its IT functions. And could you speak to this group about what that might look like? So those are three things.
Mr. Chair, members, you know, one of the biggest challenges in IT is to approach delivery of IT in a very standardized, organized way and still be able to be nimble and agile. We have to have things set up so that they scale. But I think our first take will be to really put together what that common good IT set of services consists of. And it's hard to tell what that entire list will look like. But I believe that if we deliver those very consistently across the board to all agencies, we will free up employees to be more agile, to be more responsive to what the agency business needs are. I come from a very specific mindset of IT does not exist in and of itself. It exists to serve the business needs of the organization it serves. So we are very focused on that message, and we're very aware that that's what we're here for, and that's what we need to respond to on an ongoing basis. Now, on the other hand, as we put that state project portfolio into place, we're going to be able to see all of a sudden, oh, this agency over here has this need, and they're intending to meet that need this way. This one has a very similar need. We can match those two approaches up. And maybe they have to change their business process a little bit, or maybe they have to change their requirements a little bit, but the ability to look at it from an enterprise view will be very, very positive going forward. Speaking of the cloud, we actually are the first state to have sent its email to the cloud. That occurred actually just in the last couple of months. We moved, I think, 40,000 mailboxes, and nobody really knew it happened. It was done really, really well. We know that there are opportunities for other cloud services, which really is just a way of looking at, you know, maybe it's infrastructure in the cloud or whatever. We'll be taking that into account as we sort of plan for where we go with these centralized services versus agency services, but it's very much on our radar. there will probably be more of that rather than less. When it comes to offering the legislature our services, I can't count the number of legislators who have come to me and said, couldn't we be on your email system? So, yes, we can accommodate that if that's what is desired.
Thank you.
Relative to that, there have been other states, I'm trying to remember who, maybe it was Michigan, where they tried to migrate their email to the cloud, and it was a miserable failure. Do you know what those challenges were that we were able to overcome and make it a success for us?
I don't know where it fell apart in other states. I know that we started down the path of moving to enterprise email a couple years ago. Microsoft is our partner in that. And we were very, very, very demanding. We had very stringent requirements for support, for process, et cetera. I think it was really the result of a very scripted and defined partner relationship with Microsoft that allowed it. And they had a vested interest, too, because being the leading state, they wanted to point to us as a success.
Senator Benson, to this?
No.
Senator DeCriff.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner, I have a question, and what I'm trying to do is understand this from a real-world perspective and how it's really going to help. And, when we have multiple departments that are going to have access to information, I'm sure some will and some won't, depending on their need. Can you give me some examples of how that's going to really help the different departments, and what pitfalls might you see in as you move forward developing this, keeping security, mindful of security?
Ms. Parnell.
Mr. Chair, members, we know that in a public entity like this, there's a constant tension between making information accessible and yet having data privacy where it's appropriate. The people on our security team are very familiar with that tension and I think able to manage it pretty well. When we actually look at how this is going to play out, I can give you a maybe kind of simplified example, but there are a number of agencies who use case management software and applications, and they absolutely rely on it to do their business. Well, there's ways of sharing a case management application amongst agencies that make that delivery much simpler and agencies partnering for that kind of solution will be possible now. So on a very practical level, it should not be terribly evident to the end users. A lot of this is happening under the hood. It's not going to be anything that changes people's lives, especially if we're true to meeting the business needs of an agency. So a lot of it is really behind-the-scenes kinds of changes and not real evident. I can give you another example in terms of the path we already went down requiring an enterprise solution to email. There was one agency that had 28 separate email servers. Now, each of one of those requires hardware, software upgrades, patches for security, system administration, and quite frankly, they were perfectly happy with their solution as they had it. Well, we did, go to an enterprise solution, and their world didn't fall apart, and we can actually point to true savings by doing that. It was very evident to the people managing those 28 servers, but the people who needed email, it was not not evident to them what had happened.
Senator Benson?
Getting back to kind of the higher level look at this, you mentioned stakeholders and you mentioned employees a couple of times. And there are many stakeholders in this process. But can you talk about how the service to the citizen, you mentioned it as you were going through your presentation, how does that manifest in your discussions and in the reality of what you're building and what you're directing the CIOs at agencies to look at?
Ms. Parnell.
Mr. Chair, members, I have not found a concerted effort on the part of the state to focus on services to citizens. I haven't found one agency that is devoted to doing that. I think we have some very old legacy systems that are just sort of crying to be updated now. We'll be able to better interact with citizens. One of the things that we're putting together is a little innovation program. In my mind, because so much of this is happening under the hood and it's not going to be terribly obvious to a lot of people, we have to look at ways to specifically call out improvements for citizens. So we're putting together a small-scale innovation program that will serve a couple of purposes. It will generate ideas specific to improving services for citizens. It might be one little app that sits on the web that a citizen would find useful. But we're going to tap the IT employees who are very, very smart for these kinds of ideas, have the ideas generated, vet them for practicality and impact, and have very short turnaround times for this kind of effort. So we'll put together a sort of virtual innovation team for 6 weeks and expect them to deliver something. Maybe it's a prototype, maybe it's a plan for something further, and then we'll sort of rotate people through that kind of virtual innovation group. But the real goal will be to focus on how can we better provide services to citizens. And hopefully that'll help us focus a little more effort and time there. I think it's happening in pieces around the state, but I don't think that there's been a concerted effort to that end.
Senator Benson.
Mr. Chair, Ms. Parnell, it sounded like you were focused within OET. I'm, redirecting the question to how are you changing the culture at agencies through technology. This is a great opportunity for agencies as you're giving them a solid IT backbone to look at their web-facing presence or maybe their data access for phone service. Are you looking at creating that culture? You said it doesn't necessarily exist. Or is that outside your purview?
Ms. Parnell.
Mr. Chair, members, no, I think that definitely has to be a part of the package. We've been so focused on getting this plan set up and going forward. But we're very conscious of the fact that we are changing a culture. And we do believe that by sort of streamlining and making IT leaner, part of the culture change will be some time or energy freed up for looking at more innovative ways of doing things. There's a lot of things converging. There's the IT consolidation. There's a retirement of employees. There is one of my major jobs is to educate people on looking at IT from an enterprise level instead of just a sort of narrow agency level. On the other hand, we really do honor the fact that there are a lot of unique needs in agencies. Building a road is completely different than housing prisoners, and both of them require technology. So it's not something that we have gotten down to specifics on, but it's very much in our view. We're also, I believe, pretty intent on changing the culture of the IT organization as well. And I think that implies a lot of communication, a lot of opportunity for employee input in ways to be more creative, ways to be more efficient, et cetera.
Now, Ms. Parnell, you touched on earlier about procurement and some opportunities there. And specific to technology, many of our procurement procedures, they work well if you're wanting office furniture, and if it takes 18 months to get a contract, that's not a big deal. But if we're talking technology services, 18 months might mean that everything is now archaic and outdated. Could you talk a little bit about that some more? What are the opportunities there? What the current procedures that might be causing us problem? Maybe it might not even be so much of we save money, but it might be some of that cost avoidance you're talking about. Could you talk about that a little more?
Mr. Chair, you hit the nail on the head. I think that procurement of technology has to sort of have a different path than other kinds of procurement. For example, we might want to pilot some technology without making a long-term commitment to a vendor. There's not a real clean way of doing that right now. Now, I do know that we are working with administration, who really is in charge of procurement, and Commissioner Cronk is very open to looking at the reforms that we need and that we're looking for, and I have every belief that they'll be able to deliver the changes that we need so that we wouldn't require legislation.
Senator DeCrafe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner, I have a question. We're spending, a lot of time and effort to put this together. Is this something that that the state of Minnesota, is there like a copyright or is there some kind of rights to all the information we're putting together right now? Or if one employee just leaves Minnesota, do they take all of the work that we did with them and they just take it to somebody, another state?
Ms. Parnell.
Mr. Chair, members, we are actually looking at copyrighting our material. We have had a lot of comments on it from around the country because we put it out on our site as soon as it's soup. So, yes, for example, our reference model for IT is something that we are going to be copyrighting, which I believe we can do on an agency basis, not an individual basis, but... as I said before, we just have a crackerjack team working on this and planning, and I think they deserve all the credit.
Senator Benson.
Senator Nelson?
Nelson, sorry. Yeah. I was just talking to Benson.
Yeah. Thank you. I have a question that I've been thinking about during your presentation, and if it's something that isn't in this realm, don't hesitate to let me know. But as we're looking at agency, kind of the IT consolidation, it seems to me that one of the issues that where I think we need some improvement is kind of a customer-centric view. So when our constituents and our citizens interact with the state government, and they give all their information to whatever agency it is that they're working with. And sometimes things are cross-agency. And it's very hard for them to understand that, as I understand it, these agencies can't really talk to one another. So they're not really getting their problem solved because the input they're giving is just staying within that one agency. And... I'm curious if this type of consolidation between agencies would make it more user-friendly for Minnesota citizens. So when they interact with government, they don't need to go to each individual agency, so to speak.
Ms. Parnell.
Mr. Chair, members, I agree with you that there's a real need for that. Now, the way I see that playing out is... sort of marrying technology with business process improvement. Now, IT does not own that business process. We can often comment on it or we can suggest ways of doing things better and then back up that approach with technology. But that's really a joint effort between an agency and whatever back-end technology there is. And I know that Commissioner Cronk and actually the governor as well is very focused on increasing lean within the state, which really digs into those business processes and re-engineers them and makes them simpler. I think also some of what you spoke to is probably a reflection of some pretty old systems. And as those systems come up for renewal, we'll be able to improve processes as well as the technology.
Just to follow up.
Senator Mills.
I think that's a good view to keep in mind then as we are updating to get to that point where we're just a little more user-friendly for our citizens and our constituents. And maybe I can follow up with you offline if there's specific other, I don't know if there's legislative things or if we've got some archaic legislation in the way of allowing agencies to share information. But thank you for keeping that in mind.
When the legislation was passed, included in that was a requirement for a feasibility study that's not due until January 2014, but to look at the lottery, TRA, campaign finance. Is any of that in the works yet, or is that still down the road?
Mr. Chair, that's still down the road. We have started having conversations. We will want to come up with a process for doing that assessment, and we just have not started that yet.
Okay. Well, then, and I just have one last question. There may be some final comments, but one last question. Regardless of whether you think we can do anything to help or not, can you identify what have been some of your major roadblocks or things that have slowed you down? And if there are ways that we might be able to help, either legislatively or politically, certainly we'd love to hear that. But what have been your challenges?
Mr. Chair, I really have to say that we have had an incredible amount of cooperation from agencies who, as you might well imagine, were not all in favor of this. It's a major change, and yet they stepped up to the plate. We had that very aggressive October 1st date. I think going forward, my biggest concern is paying for this effort. It's one thing to use existing resources to do all the planning. We're convinced and have confidence that we can do this, but it really is an unfunded mandate. So my request coming back to you is if MMB for some reason can't find that mechanism, that we come back to you and try to figure out some way to fund this whole effort. Beyond that, the legislative language as it stands is really important. It doesn't allow for a lot of exceptions, and it really allows us to not be distracted by making arguments, you know, for or against the inclusion of something or exclusion of something. So,
Senator Benson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just wanted to acknowledge the work of Gopal Khanna in helping to get some of the things in place that have helped you launch so successfully. You've picked up the flag and charged forward, but I didn't want us to complete this particular session without acknowledging that there were some good things that had started coming, and we finally got this launched, and that was my only comment.
Members, any other comments or questions? All right. Well, Ms. Parnell, thank you very much. Don't hesitate to let me know or any members here if there's something that we can do to help or facilitate, or if you need some legislative change, certainly, of course, you know, these are the people to go to. Thank you very much for coming.
Mr. Chair, members, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
If there's nothing, Senator Bono.
Mr. Chair, would you suggest going forward that if members have things that they'd like to work on before this committee, that we bring them the ideas to you directly before, you know, what would you like the process to be?
Senator Bonoff, it's a good question. I'm pretty flexible. Clearly, if we want to discuss something in the committee, if you'd let me know, then we can get it on the agenda.
Good.
So make sure that we make time for that and get it structured, et cetera. And as we get into this a little more deeply, we only have Right now, we've got the committee scheduled once a week. We may need to schedule some additional meetings in the off hours as we get into things. If we have legislation we're considering and need to make deadlines and whatnot. So just be aware of that. And my last question for the committee, I understand, Senator Rest, on Friday mornings you have an event in the mornings, and a 9 o'clock start time would work better for you. Is that correct, Senator Rest?
Mr. Chair, that's true once a month.
Once a month.
For the 9 o'clock. My Rotary Club meets at 7 a.m. I can get here by 8:30 or that, but when we have the Twin West Legislative Breakfast, that's very hard to get here by 8:30.
Sure. Oh, okay.
Otherwise, I can get here by 8:30 three out of four times.
Okay. So I would just suggest that either you or whoever is paying attention to the scheduling, watch that time, because we may move a little bit to accommodate circumstances such as that. Yes, Senator Rest.
I was wondering if you'd, I'm not sure who, whether it's the Deputy Majority Leader or the President, who directs bills to the committee for the proper jurisdiction. And I was wondering if you'd had any conversations with whoever that person is for your caucus, so that we don't have to go through the process of re-referring bills on
yes.
the
on yes.
the floor, because
yeah,
they're more appropriately
we're
now they're more appropriately directed toward this this subcommittee, just to streamline that process.
Yes, that would be the president's office
that
directs those. And yeah, we're working through that proper jurisdictional.
So they know
question,
to send them
yeah,
here or
yeah.
to send them to Senator Perry's committee.
Trying to get that properly defined. Yes.
Thank you.
And thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'm sorry I had to step out. What I'm wondering is, are we going to be actively engaging the agencies as we go through these hearings so that, and maybe you talked about that when I stepped out, but to make sure that we have agency representation as we're talking about some of these concepts so that, or maybe that's not possible. I don't know.
Sure. Absolutely, and that's part of, well, Senator Bonhoeff has stepped out, I think, to go do a press conference. That's part of, if there's something you want to discuss or something for the agenda, if you let me know, then we can make sure that the proper agencies are notified so that they can be here in the event that we need their commentary. Or if specifically we want to make sure, then we will send a strong request that they send someone to be here. Senator Rest.
I have another specific question. At that chamber meeting this morning, Representative Anderson mentioned Representative McFarland's bill called the Magic Bill. And I wonder, who is this? Are you the Senate author?
No, I believe it's Senator Carlson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd be, Senator Rest, I'd be happy to answer any questions you may have.
Well, I was just wondering, is that bill going to come to this committee? Because that would seem like to be just a perfect place for the discussion of it.
Well, Senator Rest, we passed that 62-1 last session.
Oh, we've already done
yes,
it.
Yes, we have.
Okay. Well, they talked about it being so new and everything, and I thought,
the House is just a little behind.
We're
getting in front of them.
Sorry.
No.
Anyway, I
didn't even know
maybe
that.
We should have a little presentation on it with
you.
The House.
Maybe we should review it, though.
Yeah.
Because
so
it looks like
the
it's
House.
Moving
yeah.
there.
Senator Sharon.
I want to just follow up on that, because I had a similar question. I know that we had passed the Magic Act. We discussed it at One Minnesota in one of our breakout sessions, and but when I look at this, I go state government innovation. That so I was thinking about the Magic Act is really about how to facilitate innovative projects at local government. That one specifically county level, and I have some legislation I'd like to develop really that expands that. But it's not state government innovation. I mean, it just depends on how we're defining what comes in front of this committee. So if we had not voted on that, and if it were a new bill, would that be considered appropriate to this committee or some other committee? That's a good question.
Well, I'm not familiar with the specifics in the Magic Act, but we are a subcommittee of the state government. So I presume that that's what... If it falls under the purview of state gov, then it could fall under the purview of this committee. Although we do, again, going back to my opening comments, we do have more of a horizontal purview than a vertical purview. So there may be some things that technically are not state government that might fall through this subcommittee. Senator Carlson.
Mr. Chair, Senator Sharon, I think that you're absolutely correct, because anything that we do, we all do this for the taxpayers, and we all know that. And so whether it's something that facilitates the county, whether it facilitates the state government, it's all part of the whole innovation of how do we deliver better government to the citizens. And I think you're absolutely correct. I think this would be a perfect purview, a perfect example. Beltrami County, I hope I'm not calling them out, but got slapped by the Department of Health and Human Services here in the state of Minnesota because they were being innovative. They went out and contracted for their chemical dependency contracts, and in their contracts they stipulated that they had to provide outcome-based measures. In their contracts, they saved money over what they could have contracted using the state contracted contractors. So they saved money. They were getting outcome-based measures, and they were told they had to cease and desist. It's a perfect example of a situation where a federal mandate through the Centers for Medicaid and Medicaid Services dictates to the state that they have to contract for these chemical dependency services. The state then turns around and tells the counties that they have to do this. The counties end up paying almost a fourth of it themselves. So they get some money, whether it's from federal government, from the state government, but they still end up paying a lot of it, and yet their hands are tied to do what's best for their citizens, providing better outcomes, providing getting people sober, getting people off of drugs, and saving money in their contracts, and yet we're telling them they can't do that, and it's insane. And so this is you're exactly right, and that's kind of a county thing, but it's a state thing. So I think all these ideas need to come before this committee.
Senator Rest.
And Mr. Chairman, Senator Carlson, I agree wholeheartedly with you. And I for some of those things, it seems to me we could be proposing a waiver system, and that could go through legislation. And what comes to my mind is. And this is a few years back, but the city of Crystal, one of my cities, and the city of New Hope worked together on restaurant inspection. So they had one thing, and the Department of Health came in again and told them to cease and desist. Each city had to do their own. They could not cooperate with a single program, and that was ridiculous. And yet there must have been some rule somewhere that made the Department of Health act in such an outrageous way, because, of course, it costs more to then have the bureaucratic set up to have independent inspections. So.
Senator Sharon.
Well, given everybody seems to be interested in this subject and probably has a million examples of where we need to design a system, and that is exactly what I'm writing in this legislation, is an expansion of the work of the MAGIC Act to apply that more broadly to local governments to get waivers, and designing a system where that can be done quickly and efficiently. It would be great to have a conversation here about that, because one of the questions I'm struggling with for language is whether or not this legislature would be willing to let go of the power, I suppose it would be, of making that decision about the waivers, to sort of let a stakeholder group that we would delegate authority to really get in there and make decisions rapidly and quickly. So that language is not quite developed yet. It's being born off of the old innovations mm-hmm. legislation. And we talked about this in One Minnesota. And so I've picked it up, and I am working on that language. And would, if this is an appropriate place, I'd like to bring it here for discussion and for good problem solving.
Senator Carlson.
Well, and I thank you, Mr. Chair. And I think you're right, Senator Sharon, that basically what the Article 1 of the MAGIC Act, if it passes the House and gets the governor and he signs it, in effect turns Minnesota from a Dillon rule state to a modified Cooley doctrine state, which I don't want to get too far into the weeds, but the Dillon Dillon rule basically means that counties can only do what the state tells them to do, period. Under the Cooley doctrine, the counties are free to do pretty much anything they want, unless the legislature tells them they can't do that. Now we've modified that somewhat so that they're not free to just go, you know, to go run wild, you know, and so that's modified in the language. So, but it does already give them the freedom, and that's to avoid having to do waivers. There will be situations where there's something that's prescribed by the legislature where they will have to still seek a waiver, but in the absence of dictating a certain way, they will already have that freedom where they don't have it now. For example, in Beltrami County, in the case I just told you about, had the Magic Act been passed and in force, they would already be free to do what they were doing with that contracting, saving themselves money and getting better outcome for citizens. So I hope that you would help me, because we're struggling right now in the House. I don't know why. The House is struggling with Article 1 of the whole Magic Act. They're struggling with this idea that we're going to lose control of the counties and they're going to run amok. And so if you would talk to your House members, talk with your county commissioners, have them turn around, and for those that have the ear of the governor's office, we're getting some pushback from the governor's office, quite frankly, and I was really surprised by that. I have to say I've been very impressed by Governor Dayton's desire to want to be innovative. And on this one issue, they're kind of dragging their feet, so I'm not – maybe I need a little help there.
Senator Sherry.
Well, I'd like to respond to that. I absolutely agree that I think we have work to do. It went through the Senate, but it's stumbling over in the House because it's the same thing that creates when we design legislation, that when you loosen up the parameters, instead of having so many defined protections for certain stakeholders or groups, those stakeholders or groups become fearful that if you give up the authority to the counties to make some of these decisions, that they will be left with the consequences. And so cities are beginning to express some concerns about if the county has this kind of flexibility, that they will take care of their budgets at our expense. So that's some of what we have to think about. You know, how do we make certain that there's no way we can do this without the risk of some of that happening, you know. But I just don't think we ought to let the risk of that happening stop us from the experimentation so that we can then improve the system, get the good things, and then fix the things that are unintended consequences.
Senator Carlson. And thank you for that, Senator Sharon. I do know that, and I don't have a copy of the legislation in front of me, but the last sentence in Article 1 of the Magic Act specifically prohibits the counties from doing anything that would supersede or override any other local unit of government. So the protection's there for those local units of government. I know that the League of Minnesota Cities has come out and expressed some concerns, and I think rightfully so. If Article 1 of that whole act was thrown out, then there would be concern. But as long as we leave Article 1 intact, which is this idea of going from the Dillon rule to the modified Cooley Doctrine, that sentence is there to protect the city. So I think their concern, if you're hearing from the League of Minnesota Cities, their concern is that if Article 1 was removed, because that's where the consternation is, I understand, from the governor's office, then they're not protected. And so, you know, and I get that. But as long as Article 1 remains intact, they're covered, I think.
Senator Benson, did you have a last comment?
I just wanted to thank Senator Carlson for not naming it the Dillon Cooley modification.
On that note, then, the meeting is adjourned.
Back in Iowa, yeah, in 1800s.